You are listening to the Punk News Podcast for the week of February 20th, 2013. So as uttered by both Joey Ramone and Iceberg Slim, hey ho, let's go.
Let's go.
Yo, 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 Punk News. This is Features Editor John Gentile, and we got a lot to talk about in the podcast today. A lot to talk about. We're going to be talking about Frank Turner, Travis Barker, Paint It Black's new record. We're going to be talking about Dr. Dre, the king of all hip-hop producers. We're going to be talking about The Descendants' brand new watch and the Gaslight Anthem. And on top of that, we got some fierce new jams. We got a fierce jam from Heathen Rain, and we got a fierce jam from myself, a band called Crazy in the Brains, and I think we'll kick off with that. Crazy in the Brains is actually a pretty cool band. They're not real known yet, but they're going to put out their first true LP pretty soon. It's a mix of classic garage rock, straight up regular punk rock, and the interesting part, I guess, is it's almost got a tropical feel because they have a xylophone in almost all their songs. You would think that would get old, but it totally doesn't. The band rips. They put out a split 7-inch and a cassette so far. They're both just pretty much straight up kicking punk rock. They're getting some notice over at Spinner, and I think they might be kind of big. We'll see. They've got a new album coming out. No one knows what it's going to be called, and no one knows when it's coming out exactly. Probably March, April, or May. This is the first track off of Doe, and it is called King Kong. Joining us on the round table tonight, in the northeast corner, wearing the red and white shorts decorated with a maple leaf, the Ontario Oscillator, the Provincial Pulverizer, weighing in at 228 reviews. From Ontario, Canada, managing editor, Adam White!
Well, you really worked a few in there. I'm impressed.
And in the southeast corner, wearing the red, white, and blue shorts, the Colonial Kid, the Yankee Doodle Dandy, weighing in at 104 meaty reviews from Richmond, Virginia, video editor Chris Moran.
Yeah, like Apollo Creed with those trunks.
And of course, the judge of tonight's bout is that Sultan of the Silicon Valley, former sound editor for Sound Scene Revolution and veteran of over 150 podcasts, Sound Guy Nairman. All right, boys, I want a clean podcast. No biting, no kicking, no talking about anybody's mom, and certainly no discussion of any pop punk whatsoever. When I say break it up, you break it up and go to your individual corners. Now touch gloves and prepare yourselves. Let's get ready to podcast! And the first thing that we're going to talk about on today's Punk News Podcast is Frank Turner. I don't think this came to a surprise to a lot of people, being that Frank Turner was recently one of the main acts at the opening ceremony of the Olympics. But Frank Turner, who's been in the punk scene for about 12 or 14 years now, who used to be in a punk band called Million Dead, who has lately been doing kind of like a singer-songwriter kind of guy, he just signed to Interscope Records, which is a major label. He's leaving Epitaph. And actually, he had a statement about that that basically said, "I guess it just felt like the right move for me right now." Funnily enough, Brett Gerowitz of Epitaph Records agrees. It's a license deal, so it doesn't affect the way I go about my business, but does mean I can hopefully move things up in the USA. Win-win for me. So I guess my question is, you know, people used to get chewed out for joining major labels in the 80s and 90s, but it seems like everybody's positive. So has the public perception changed about major labels? Is this selling out? Is there such a thing as selling out anymore? What do you guys think?
I think the problem here is that everything is just so fucked in the music industry that you're not really all that much worse off, you know, stuck in a major contract at this point than you were otherwise. It's not like it was 10 years ago where all of a sudden you're going to be showered with money at the cost of your integrity, and you're guaranteed some level of like horrible success with, you know, a shitty version of whatever music you would have done independently released to the masses. It's like the major labels don't have that kind of draw right now. I mean, they have good distribution still. They have that kind of established network of getting things out there. They've gotten all kinds of, you know, power in terms of licensing, getting Frank Turner's music in the background of a scene on Grey's Anatomy when everyone starts having sex is probably the best he's going to get out of here. Because I can't imagine that, you know, the general public is going to care that much about what Interscope does. They definitely, you know, there's no name credibility that the majors have with the public anymore. It's not like it's the 70s where, you know, any of the label names mattered. And it's not like there's that music is able to break through the fractured, you know, incredibly scattered public attention span right now. So signing to a major today just doesn't really mean the same as it did, you know, I want to say even, you know, like 10 years ago. So, you know, well, yeah, I can absolutely see why it may tweak some people that, you know, still idealize the independent label. And I guess, like, I'm one of them in that, you know, I do idealize the independent label, but I have no, you know, illusions that this is really going to do anything. I don't think we've seen anyone sign to a major in a long time where the major has, you know, aside from maybe some back end business shit, has really propelled them to anything. I mean, who of the recent major label signings from the punk scene have done anything with it? You know, like I'm going back to like the Alkaline Trio. What happened there? Nothing. And they're back. You go look at, like, you know, the Gaslight Anthem right now. Sure, they're on a major. Has it really made any discernible difference to anyone aside from the guys in the band? I'm not sure. Has it really gotten them any further than it would have? I don't know. Chris, I mean, Gaslight's a good example here. I mean, you know those guys. Like, has being on a major, does it make a whole shit ton of difference these days?
No, do they, like, roll around in, like, a limousine and wear, like, fur coats and stuff?
Yeah, they all have vests. They have a vest made from gorilla chests. And get the reference? Anyways. Yes,
maybe.
Yeah, it is. No, I mean, I think, you know, and they recorded for a while, too. I mean, it was ever since, I mean, literally after Sink or Swim, they had them talking to them. And I think what I've seen from not just them, but other bands who have had those conversations is majors are more looking at the long term now. You're not going to see anything like we saw from the best example I think of is, you know, MCA Records, for example. They, you know, remember when they were signing up like everyone? What was it like? They had H2O, they had, I mean, all those fucking pop punk bands they signed back then. And what happened? It sunk them. They thought that the CD craze was going to happen forever, where everybody would pay $16 for a CD and they could just keep cashing in. No, majors are now looking at like long term. Who is a good long term investment? Who has a sound that's going to last for a long time? Gaslight, I think, is one of those bands. Frank Turner, I think Frank Turner is going to do very well. I think a major label is very smart for him. I mean, he's got, and this is the best way when I think of why Gaslight can be so successful with a major. Same thing with Frank, is because they both have universal sounds, a sound that Frank Turner, aside from some of his lyrics, has songs that you could play for your parents and they dig. You could play for like a coworker and they would like. So I think it's a perfect fit for Frank Turner. The best example of why I think it would work, I'll tell you. About a year ago, I was like in a Macy's or something, and I was just walking by. I want to say it was like the young adult section, and Frank Turner was playing on the fucking stereo in there, like the stereo, the PA system, whatever you want to call it. Frank Turner playing in Macy's.
You know, I really like that you brought up MCA Records, because the H2O example is a perfect example of what I don't think happens anymore, and I think that's why people probably aren't going to get too bent out of shape about this. And this, if you remember, you know, H2O was never, you know, the paragon of hardcore by any means, but they had a sound that was, you know, rooted enough in that, you know, kind of post Sick of It All, post Madball, you know, kind of skate punk version of you know, New York hardcore that they had going. And they had three or four records for Epitaph that were all, you know, in the pretty similar vein. I think they had three. When they went to MCA and Go came out, there was so much obvious, you know, meddling from the major that showed up on there. Now, whether it was at the insistence of the major or whether the band just took it as an artistic direction doesn't really matter. It was the perception of it was, oh, look, H2O has signed to a major and their record that came out sounds like Blink-182. And I remember that Toby had like a vocal coach for that record, and they did all kinds of things that didn't make the band sound like they sounded. It made them sound like a generic pop punk band, which was the reason that they were signed, really, is that that's what they were trying to make money on. I don't think that's the situation these days. I don't think Interscope is really going to require that Frank Turner do anything different than what he does. And I think that plays into what you were talking about them playing a little bit more of a long game. They want Frank Turner because he makes Frank Turner records and they think they can sell more of those. They don't want Frank Turner because they think they can, you know, give him some hair gel and a vocoder and he'll sound like Justin Bieber.
Do you think they're signing Frank Turner as what they call like a legacy act, kind of like the Flaming Lips is? Like the Flaming Lips, they're on a major label, like, and they're very highly critically successful. But the Flaming Lips have said the Flaming Lips do not make money for the record label. They cost the record label money, but the reason they keep them is because they give the record label some sort of respect or validity. Do you think that's why they're signing Frank Turner, or do you think they're signing him kind of off the back end of like Lumineers and those kinds of groups?
Well, I think they think they can make money with him. I don't think they would have made that decision otherwise. I just don't think that they. I doubt that the impression's there that they're going to go, oh, with a few, you know, tweaks and changes, then we can really make money off this Frank Turner guy. Like, I don't think that's necessarily the situation that we're in anymore, because the public doesn't care about mass market music that much. It's just, you know, no one's listening to MTV or listening to the radio in the way that they were. You know, a major can't break a band. You know, they can have a stupid single that'll go viral for a little while, but you know, at the end of the day, no one really cares. It's not the way that the public's consuming music. So I don't think that they can take the best possible Frank Turner record and really, you know, make that much of a splash with it compared to, you know, what they were doing 10, 15, 20 years ago. So, you know, I think they can make some money. I imagine that given that since the music industry kind of fell apart, there's some, whoever still has their jobs at these labels must be making choices right now that are at least kind of positively impact the bottom line. I don't think they're signing him just to lose money on him, but at the same time, I doubt they're just waiting for like some sort of solid gold hit to drop and everything's going to change.
Actually, Adam, Chris, were you going to say something?
I was just going to say that another spin to this is, you know, signing bands like Frank Turner, the Gaslight Anthem, you know, even you bring up the Flaming Lips, that taps the record label directly into a potential stream of new bands. I mean, think about it. They know enough now about you know, the independent music scene, culture, whatever you want to call it, that bands, performers, what have you, sort of click, and the more popular ones kind of click together. I mean, that gets them right there front and center to know who could potentially be their next big seller. So, I mean, and Frank is, you know, he's one of those people that others gravitate towards.
Actually, you know, I'm glad both of you made interesting points, and you're kind of making the same point, I think, from a different direction, is for the past 4 or 5 years or so, I don't want to say smarmy labels, smaller labels, but I would say smarmy, smaller labels will be like, this is why the major labels are failing, they're not changing their business model, and that's why they're going to die. Is this maybe an example of the major labels changing their business model with more solid, smaller acts, as opposed to having these huge acts that they used to have?
They're not, you know, although I don't agree with everything about or much about major labels and whatnot, the people who work there aren't stupid. I mean, they are intelligent, educated people that know business. Now, do they put business ahead of music? Yes. But they've obviously seen that the sales model for the past 50 years is no longer going to be effective. So yeah, they're going to change. They're going to adapt. All those places, you know, got their houses cleaned and new people brought in. I mean, of course they're going to adapt and change. I mean, it's anybody who thinks otherwise, especially some of these snarky little labels who, you know, fuck the major, blah, blah. They're full of shit, because half those labels would love to have some performer that got picked, that was on their label and eventually picked up by a major, because it would sell the shit out of their back catalog.
Well, fair enough. Speaking about things crashing and burning, Travis Barker, who's in Blink 182, was going to fly to Australia, but he decided he's not going to anymore.
Zing.
The reason he's not going to is, I think, a pretty solid reason, is back in 2008, he and his friend DJ AM were in an actual plane crash. Like, they were in a plane that literally crashed, like hit the ground and like lit on fire, and lots of people died in the plane crash. Blink-182 is playing Australia, and they weren't sure if Travis Barker was going to make it. And he decided he's not going to go. Here's their official statement. Blink-182 said, "The band knew the chances of Travis overcoming his fear of flying, which was magnified after the horrible plane crash in 2008, would be a challenge, but we wanted to play for our fans in Australia nonetheless. The three of us tried all measures to get us all there in full form. Travis has been working to overcome his fear of flying. Since we now know that we have to make the trip without Travis, our friend Brooks Wakerman from Bad Religion and Tenacious D has stepped in." So I got to say, I don't really blame Travis Barker for never ever taking a plane ever again. But I was surprised that some people were kind of dissing him, saying he should do it for the fans. I think that's kind of a high standard.
Couldn't they rent a boat?
They could, but a boat to Australia are like literally like a month. It's like a long time to get to Australia.
Well, they need to practice. They haven't been too active. I mean,
well, they could sell it like one of those cruises.
Yeah,
like that Weezer cruise that people went on. like you get on a boat and listen to fucking Blink-182 for a month straight.
get the participants on Top Chef on there too. You know, like they're doing the Top Chef cruise. I mean, you know, you could make this into a full fuck. Get some Disney characters on there so families will come. Man, you can make this a multicultural, multi scene crossing adventure.
On a serious note, yeah, our readers were really off base, I think, on this one. Like, you know, I'm no Blink fan these days, but you can't fault someone for how they feel. Like, you can't argue that away. It's how they feel. So if he doesn't feel like he can, you know, succumb this fear, if he doesn't feel like getting on the plane, he's not wrong. It's just, it's the way that the dude feels. So like everyone's, you know, yelling at him, "Oh, suck it up. Go do it for the fans." Like he's not making like a bad business decision. He's terrified. Like, leave him alone. I don't know. It seems to me that there's a lot of, you know, getting angry about things that aren't worth getting angry about when you read the comments on this. Just like, the dude doesn't want to get on the plane. That's how he feels. So what, you're going to yell at him on the internet and he's going to overcome his fear of flying? Good job, Punk News commenters.
But not only that, I think it's pretty justified. Honestly, I didn't think anybody ever survived a plane crash ever, except for like the Wright brothers. And it's not like he's not getting on a plane just because he's scared. He's not getting on a plane because he survived a fiery death trap from like 1,000 feet above the ground, you know?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm sort of baffled at the criticism here. Like, dude doesn't want to get on a plane. He's a fairly valid reason. People are arguing, like, statistics. Like, oh, you know, statistically, you're more likely to get killed in a car crash or something like that. And yeah, that's absolutely true. But when you have a phobia of something, when you have a, you know, a fear, especially a fear that's been rooted in some sort of trauma, you're not statistics to argue, oh, okay, never mind. I was being dumb. I'll get on the plane. Just like, let the dude be terrified. It's the way he feels.
I imagine it's like an A-team scenario. He's like, I'm not getting on no plane. It's like, that's all right, Travis. Have this warm glass of milk. And then like 12 hours later, he wakes up in Australia. Chris, you're a Bad Religion maniac. How about Brooks Wakerman drumming for him? What do you think of that?
You know, I saw some of the comments, or at least one person who said, you know, that with him playing, that's a lineup I'd want to see. No, Travis isn't a bad drummer. I mean, he's a good drummer, and I mean, he's energetic. You know, I think sometimes he's a little too over the top, but you know, Brooks is a good dude. He can fill in. I mean, I think at this point, Blink-182, it's more of, you know, it's like the Beatles, not like in the sense of that there are like to that level.
You think that Blink-182 is the same as the Beatles?
No. Let me finish. and just for reference, I don't really like the Beatles, but where it's more like it's a pop culture thing where it's more about Mark and Tom and Travis than it is the band Blink-182, if that makes sense. You go there because you're like, well, there's Mark, well, there's Tom, well, there's Travis. It's not like I'm there to see this great band that is Blink-182. I think it's definitely, you know, if you're a big Blink fan, this is a bummer because, you know, he's like an integral part of that and blah, blah, blah. So, I mean, Brooks is a good drummer. He'll fill in. He'll play the songs probably better than Travis plays. And Brooks is a very proficient, very precise drummer. I just think that it's more about the band being able to perform the songs. It's more of a show. And not in a show like performing. I mean, like a show of like three characters there.
Mm.
It's also not a good show, but that's kind of beside the point.
They were never good, dude. I saw them open for Less Than Jake, and they were fucking horrible. And, like, when they got big, I was just appalled that they could get that big.
You know, I'm glad you guys both said that, because honestly, I am not a Blink-182 fan at all. But it seems that more and more kids are talking about Blink-182 almost like they're one of the classic punk pantheon bands. You know, they're like even bands now, but like, yeah, we're really influenced by Blink-182. And I don't mean like crap bands. I mean bands that are passable, that people like actually like. So is that just because we're older now and that kids that are like 18, 19, 20 see Blink as this milestone band? Like, to me, Blink-182 is just this pop punk band that really doesn't matter at all.
Dude, well, it's beyond that. Talk to the Fake Problems kids. Those dudes see Blink as like gods.
What's up with that? Like, for real.
Well, I guess it's partly a generational thing. I mean, I'm probably older than the Fake Problems guys. I don't know. How old do you think they are?
Like seven?
No, they're in their mid-20s.
Okay, so I'm a little bit older than him. So, but I remember even when I was in high school and Enema of the State broke. Like, that record broke. Like, that was not like a minor hit. That was like one of the biggest rock records of that year. So if you were of a certain age at that, you know, when that happened, you know, regardless of the fact that, like, in hindsight, you know, a lot of Blink's stuff was kind of dumb and these people, like, you know, really would mature into other kinds of music and probably leave the band behind, you know, it was potentially a major, major band in the development of a lot of kids. So I kind of get it from that perspective. And there's, I feel that a little bit of it is backlash. Like, a little bit of it is people saying, oh, you know what, everyone's been ragging on Blink for so long, where I'm just going to stand up and, you know, tell the world that I love them or something. I think there's a little bit of that that's going on, but I totally get why they were a major band for a lot of people. I doubt they were really a major band in terms of influencing a lot of these musicians' sounds these days, or influencing a lot of their fans' future tastes. But they were a major band in just terms of getting people, let's just say, like, into rock music in general. So, you know, I get that. I'm sure there is some section of dumb kids that's looking at them like, I don't know, like we would look at like Jawbreaker or something. But I don't know.
You shut your mouth.
Okay. I will.
We won't have that comparison.
But then how come, like, Blink-182 stuck around when, say, the President of the United States or Space Hog faded away?
Because they weren't lump. No, you know why Blink got big, in all honesty?
Because they're, like, handsome guys?
Well, no, I read this a couple years ago, actually. I forgot where it was. I'll have to go look it up again. But there's a story that basically, and it involves, believe it or not, NoFX. And basically, they tried to get NoFX to a major for quite a while. And eventually moved on, and Blink-182 had done a show in the same area or something like, or maybe it was they actually played a NoFX show, I can't remember, but if you remember back then, Tom sang a lot like Fat Mike. I mean, he sang just fucking like him, and they took the next best thing.
If you want my opinion on why, you're probably right, that is probably why Blink
ended up poop joke songs and all that, you know?
You know, you're right there. That's why they got signed. Why Blink broke? It was the video for All the Small Things.
Yeah, yeah.
Because, you know, that was that video. It this was like still during the time when MTV or Much Music up here in Canada, when those things mattered to a lot of kids. And so, you know, they had that video come out. It took the piss out of all those boy band videos that were out at the same time, which then in turn got it played by the stations to all of the kids that were into those, you know, into all that, you know, manufactured pop and boy band stuff. And it exposed this, you know, little goofy fun rock band to all these people that didn't normally encounter music like that. And it took off because that wasn't the lead single from that record either. The lead single from that record was What's My Age Again. And, you know, there was a video for it and everything, but I remember seeing that video on like the late night indie rock show up here in Canada at the time. We have a show on Much Music up here called The Wedge. It's the same show that Damien from Fucked Up hosts today, and they'll play just like all kinds of like, you know, weird indie esoteric stuff at like 2 a.m. and that's where they played the video at first for What's My Age Again, because no one gave a shit. but it was that All the Small Things video, which, and then just boom, everything blew up off of that. I don't know why I know this much about Blink-182. I feel kind of ashamed, but
well, I don't know. Damn it! Though, like, kind of really broke them, though.
Well, I mean, Damn It was popular, but Damn It was popular, I think, amongst like kids that were listening to like whatever rock radio stations would play that. Like, I don't think like little girls that were listening to whatever boy band was out when Damn It came out, they didn't give a shit. Like, there's Breaking, and then there's Breaking,
right.
and you know.
I don't like them, but it's a funny video. I mean, with his like teeth blacked out and shit, like doing like the boy band thing, it's funny.
Yeah, I'm just saying that's why I think it happened. Okay, I got to correct one thing from our conversation on this, just because it slightly changes the dramaticism of Travis's condition. The plane crash that he was in crashed because it failed to take off from the runway. It didn't plummet 1,000 feet out of the air, whatever you said.
No, listen, it fell at like 14,000 feet. Like, they were like in space, and like it was on fire. And there was, like,
dude, the pilot was high on cocaine and drunk, and he flew it upside down. If you get the reference.
All the people got killed though, right?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Well, honestly, people getting killed, you get a free pass. That's the John Gentile bright line rule, you know.
I'm not trying to minimize it or anything. I'm just saying that it didn't fall 1,000 feet out of the air.
But how's he getting to Europe though? Somebody brought that up in the comments.
He's not going to Europe. Oh, boats. Somebody answer that. Boats.
Is he really taking a boat?
Yeah, you can get to Europe by boat in like a couple of weeks,
but,
or like a week.
But he's on the West Coast though.
Oh, is he? We can.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know, man. At any, I don't know. Don't know, but I gotta say, I'm not faulting the guy for not flying. You know, honestly, maybe like the flight to Australia is so long he doesn't want to take it. Who knows? Or maybe it's the type of plane. You know, I don't know. So, anyways, it's a rare incident that I'm in Travis Barker's corner, but I'm in his corner on this one. So, I guess in other boy band news, a lot of people are getting excited about the new Painted Black EP. Their new EP follows two EPs they put out in 2010, I think. It's called Invisible, and here's what Painted I guess the punk news people probably know. Painted Black is a pretty hardcore, introspective, but also very clever, intelligent, hardcore band from Philadelphia, with Dan Yemin, who does lead vocals, as well as Andy from Ceremony. Here's what they said about the 7-inch record. This new record has been in works for what feels like a long time. This music and the culture and community that's around it don't really have an expiration date, even though the larger world around us would have us believe that these things are childish. But this isn't about avoiding adulthood. It's about redesigning it so it doesn't clash so violently with our most deeply held beliefs. It's about compromises we refuse to make, but also about subtle negotiations between ideals, aspirations, and day-to-day pragmatics. It's about figuring out how to keep making the noise even when life quiets down. Yes, it's about parenthood, but it's also about deliberately resisting corrupt mainstream value systems, and even, especially, when they're bombarding you from all sides. It's about brutal, devastating loss. More than ever, it's about alienation and outrage. Are you guys excited for this? Are you guys... What do you guys think of the statement? All I got to say is I'm going to be at the record release show in Philadelphia in March, I think. So if any of the Punk News people are there, come give me a dap. So I'll be there.
John Gentile doing the meet and greet.
$50 a person.
You know, I'm going to go off on a tangent here like I usually do.
And yeah,
just,
man.
And just say that for some reason, anytime now I see in anything punk, hardcore, whatever related – I don't really like when they use the word system. I don't know why. It just sounds like trite and cliche and just – it just annoys the shit out of me. I don't know why.
It is used quite a bit.
The system, this system, the corporate system, the mainstream system, the – it's like get another fucking – get a thesaurus or something, you know? I mean
– Chris, I'm gonna ask you this. Are systems in of themselves evil, or is it just when they're used for an evil purpose?
It's when they're used for evil purpose. I mean, even us putting this podcast together is a system.
It is.
I mean, we have a way we do it. It's an.
Are we part of the system by using this podcast?
Yes,
we're part of the system.
Yeah, we're part of the great super information highway, baby. But as for Painted Black, I didn't like the last full length, which was a bummer because...
Wait, the full length of the 7-inches.
I didn't listen to the 7-inches.
Oh, really? I love that full length, man.
Really? The
Yeah.
What's it called?
New Lexicon.
Yeah, I didn't like it. I don't know. I guess because I just like the raw, older, hardcore-sounding Paradise. And CVA is my favorite of all time. I love CVA.
Is that that's the first record?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you know, it's... I'm in my 30s, man. I'm going to, like... band's old shit no matter what, so it's just the way it goes. I don't know, Adam?
Well, okay, first of all, I want the statement that they put out, like, tattooed on my back.
You would.
I'm reading this whole thing, and I'm just like, yes! I don't know, I'm sure it's if you really sit down and analyze it, it's partly full of bullshit, but I don't know, I was reading it, and I was just like, it spoke to me. Yeah. Paint of Black. You know what? Paradise is really my favorite of them. I love CVA as well. New Lexicon, I was not a huge fan of.
My mind is being blown by you guys. I thought that was everybody's jam.
No. If it's on and I'm listening to it, I'm like, yeah, this is pretty awesome. But I think it lacks a little bit of that like melodicism that was on some of the stuff that was on Paradise that I think just hooks me more. There's just like a part of my brain that's not necessarily speaking the same language as that record, and it just doesn't do it for me as much. It's cool and everything. Don't get me wrong, I like it, but it just, I don't know. Like if I had to pick one, I would pick Paradise. I know I haven't heard the 7-inches either. I really should. I'm really looking forward to this though, and it's probably because the statement totally sold me. So this could just be like, you know, six, you know, tracks worth of farting, and I'm gonna call it really good because they've already redeemed themselves to me. You know what? I mean, for me, Paint of Black sort of exists in this realm where, you know, they're members of a bunch of bands that I listen to or that I know about. They're really super participant, or they participate a lot in like the areas of the punk scene that we cover on Punk News. So I'm very aware of everything that's going on there. But on the few times I've seen them live, it's always been just like, wow, I am totally not into this to the degree that people are into this. And I sort of just have to like step back and just like, you know, hats off to you guys that are really fucking into this because wow. I'm just thinking back to like Fest. Wouldn't be last year or the year before. I don't know what it was. Fest, whenever I was at Fest, and they played and they played the big, venue there. And they're on stage and I could not hear like a note that the band was actually playing because there was this massive sea of just like seething humanity that had piled up in this giant, you know, ragey, undulating heap in front of the stage that was just screaming along with like every lyric that was on there. And Dan just basically had to like sit there and hold the mic out, and the whole crowd just like did the whole set for them. And I don't think I actually heard like a note of actual music in it. So like as a music fan, I'm sitting there and I'm like, eh, this isn't really that enjoyable to me because I can't hear anything. But just like as a just watching it as like a social thing, I'm just blown away because I'm like, holy shit, like the dude that is at the front of that stage that is at the bottom of that sea of like, you know, nine people tall, like at the bottom of that heap. That dude is really, really, really into this, and I can't come near that. So that guy gets my respect. So, you know, I like Paint It Black, but I don't – I'm not one of those guys who's at the bottom of the pile. I guess that's where I'm going.
I've seen a Paint It Black three times. The best time I saw them was at 924 Gilman, and but they sounded really good there, and Ceremony was there too, and it was awesome. The two other times I saw them, Adam, it's like you were saying, it's just like – I guess the monitors are too small. You just hear white noise. It's so loud, and like people are like screaming along too. So you don't even like hear any music. You know, I agree with that. I disagree with you guys completely. I think New Lexicon is their masterpiece. I love that record. I think it's the most lyrically interesting, the sharpest riffage, and I think it's just an all-around interesting, deep record. Their 7-inches are fantastic as well, especially the first one, which I think was Amnesia. Amnesia was a great record. I would say Paint It Black, I disagree with them on a lot of things, but I definitely respect them as artists because they make a lot of very interesting points, some which I agree with, some which I think are completely out to lunch or out of touch. I guess their last line really interested me. It says, more than ever, it's about alienation and outrage. I would say that Paint It Black often draws a bright line after concerts. Like, if you think this, you're wrong, or if you think this, you're stupid. Which, to me, that's not really what punk rock is about, you know. So I guess they're complaining about alienation, but they seem to be alienating potential listeners to their music. But that being said, from an artistic standpoint, I think they're one of the top interesting hardcore bands out there right now, along with Ceremony, Effed Up, and probably a couple of other bands. So I don't know. I'm definitely excited. I'll definitely be in this, and I'll definitely be excited for the show. And it'll be no matter what, it'll be interesting. And speaking of interesting jams, I think we've got an interesting jam from Brian Yancey coming up right now. So let's, Brian, what do you got?
Ahoy, hoy, punk fans. It's Brian Yancey, not on the Punk News Podcast Roundtable this week, but I do have a song for you that I'm very excited to share. This comes from Philadelphia's Heathen Rain, a fairly new band, noisy hardcore, which I am a fan of. The band features members of Creepoid, Orchid, Transistor, Brain Dead, and several other either not-so-active acts or not-active-at-all acts. So the band will be releasing a new self-titled 8-song 12-inch soon. You can hear 2 songs from it at their Bandcamp page, which is heathenrain.bandcamp.com. This is actually a quote-unquote exclusive track, exclusive to the Punk News Podcast, that the band gave me. It's the opening track to their self-titled. The song, like the band, is also called Heathen Rain. And again, if you're into sort of chaotic, sort of noisy, kind of weird hardcore like I am, I think you'll enjoy this. So check it out. This is Heathen Rain.
Yeah!
And we are back. One of the most interesting things that to come out now is Trent Reznor and Dr. Dre are putting out a music service that's designed to compete with like iTunes and radio and some of those other systems. Here's what they said about it, which really kind of scared me. It says that this is their new music service, Trent Reznor and Dr. Dre. But while some musical guidance sounds innocent enough, Beats goes much further than just another spin on iTunes' genius function. It also uses GPS to track its users, always knowing exactly where you are and eventually learning your habits. Jimmy Iovine, CEO of one of the major labels, says, "If you go to the gym, we will know where you are. So when you wake up in the morning, there will be a list waiting for you. The list will be available for a myriad of situations, including Reznor's example, driving through Memphis." So I got to say, boys, I'm scared. I'm really scared of the future. Like back when like 1984 was written, like people were like, watch out. You got to fight against people spying on you. And the book was people fighting against the government and corporations spying on people. And here we have people accepting it with open arms. Most drastically, here's what they say. "But while some musical guidance sounds innocent enough, Beats goes much further than that, saying that Beats is not innocent, that it is malicious, and that it is tracking you and your every move." That scares the shit out of me.
Oh, yeah. When these headphones come alive and start killing people, they'll know right where you're, like, in the shower.
The sound already kills you.
It's not a question of the earphones killing you. It's a question of companies and corporations knowing, like, very specific data about individual private people.
Facebook does it right now.
I agree.
Well, not to me. I turn that shit off.
Yeah. And honestly, that's why I don't have a smartphone. I got to get one eventually, but I don't have a smartphone because that tracks you wherever you go. I mean, I'm scared to death of this.
John, what do you got, like a StarTAC or something?
No, I got a Zach Morris phone.
You do not.
No, I got I have a.
You got a burner.
I got a Samsung, I don't know, like flip phone.
John's got a burner.
Yeah, they're still tracking you, John, so you can use whatever phone you like. You're on the network, right? You're part of the system.
No,
so,
but I'm not on like the G3 network or whatever.
You're part of a corrupt value system, brah.
Oh, see, right now you're red flagged as one of these dissidents that is not on a G3 network.
Yep.
So they know there's something wrong with you. You're either a drug mule or you're some crackpot living in the woods. So yeah, you're on a list, so don't worry about that.
I feel like I got to become a crackpot living in the woods with all these people looking at me.
Okay, but I don't know if this is necessarily creeps me out, because I don't know, I'm a tech guy. I'm pretty aware that, you know, I have no privacy anymore, and I've accepted that because it gives me some minor conveniences, so I'm cool. That's fine. But this is one of these things that when they describe it, it sounds really good, but I think for it to be very useful, they probably need to accumulate more data than people are going to give it before they decide that it's stupid. So what I mean by that is that, okay, let's say you go to the gym. The first time you go to the gym, it's not going to know that you're at the gym. So it's not going to know what to play you. So you're going to play some, you're going to get to the gym. And when you're there, you're going to play some music or whatever. So let's say you go to the gym and your workout jam is, the Mr. T Experience. So you listen to that and you're at the gym. So, okay. So then what? So it has like one piece of data on you. So the next time you go to the gym, is it going to play you the Mr. T Experience again? Or is it going to like do something really super intelligent? Like, you were listening to MTX. So, you know, maybe you want to listen to Screeching Weasel while you're at the gym. Like, is it going to do that? Because I'm just kind of walking through the ways that this could work from an algorithm perspective. And I guess it's kind of cool, but it doesn't seem like it's going to be all that brilliant. I mean, if it, I don't know if it's necessarily going to grab data, say, from like other people. So let's say you and five other Beats users are at the gym. Is it going to go, well, hey, you're at the gym and all the other people at the gym are listening to Taylor Swift, so we're going to play you some Taylor Swift because that's clearly the popular gym music around here. Like, is it going to do that? Because that sounds like it'd be horrible. So I'm just trying to walk through the ways that this would work. And it seems like for it to work really, really well, it would probably need to pick up a pretty big and comprehensive data set, or else it's going to be predictable or weird. So I don't know. Maybe it works brilliantly and I'm just totally underestimating what they're going to do. But I've got to imagine that, like, if people use this for like the first week or so, and the system doesn't have a lot of data yet, so it doesn't exactly know what to play you, people might just get turned off by it and go, eh, this is kind of shitty. When in reality, if you would just kind of like suffer through it for a whole year, then maybe it would have some like good data and it could, you know, recommend you something that you want to hear. But I don't know. It seems like you'd really, really need to be bought into this whole ecosystem to really see the benefit of using some sort of creepy music tracking prediction thing. So, I guess I'm totally not going to use this thing, but I'm not the kind of person that buys Beats headphones either. So, I mean, John, we know you're paranoid of this. Like, Chris, what about you? Like, are you?
I'm not gonna pay somebody to fucking steal my location where they can use that for then offering me ads and services.
That's what I'm saying.
No, what I'm saying is if they're gonna do that, I mean, whatever, do it. But you know, you're making your money that way. I'm not paying for you to be able to do this. It's like if you want to offer a free service and then use that information to make your profit, then you know, go for it. I'm sure lots of people would get into it like a Facebook type deal. But to pay for that, no. Absolutely not.
I don't know. How come people can't like decide what music they want to listen to on their own? Like, why can't people explore music on their own like they did since before 2007? Like, I've discovered tons and tons of music, and I've never once had to use an iTunes Genius to tell me what I should be listening
to. Yeah, I mean, I hear you. I mean, I don't even really use like Pandora or Spotify very much. I just like hear random shit, and just I have like one of those 120 gig iPods that I throw it all on.
I use all cassettes in a Walkman so they can't track me. All analog, baby.
You know what I thought that this was when I first really like half read the article? No. When I first read through this and I saw that it was like using GPS to play you music, at first I was thinking, oh, so like it's going to go, hey, you're in Ann Arbor today. Here's some MC5 and Iggy Pop to listen to because you're in Ann Arbor. Or like something like that where it could have some sort of geographic relevance, maybe, but that's totally not what this is. So, I don't know.
Like, it's like Dr. Dre at like a console, like seeing you on the toilet, and he's like, "Oh, better pull out some toilet music," you know. So, anyways, quick. Is Detox ever going to come out?
No,
Adam.
I don't even know what you're talking about.
Oh, Detox is Dr. Dre's long, long postponed third album.
Oh, then yes.
Yeah, I got a mixtape once with some of like the raw cuts on it, and it was good, but it wasn't great. So anyways, speaking of analog things, the Descendants are releasing a Time Is Watch. It's designed by Van In Watches and it's inspired by the song Get the Time by the Descendants album. Do you guys think this is cool, a fun little thing, or is this merchandising stealing the soul of the band?
I think it's kind of cool. I mean, it's not too tacky. It's, you know, it's I like it. I could see, I mean, I know he won't, but I could see like this being something like Milo would wear or something. I don't know. It's like a goofy little watch.
Adam, would you buy the Descendants watch?
No. I mean, all right. I'm not going to get all on my high horse about merchandising. Like if the Descendants want to sell a fucking watch, that's fine. Whatever.
You think it tracks you?
It probably doesn't track you. It doesn't look like it has that much tech in it. But man, if anything was going to track you, this should be the thing that tracks you because you wouldn't suspect that it's going to track you. But all right, I got to call bullshit on two things here. First of all, the Descendants did not release a watch punk news article that we wrote. Some company released a watch and they paid the Descendants to use their logo and shit on it. So that's not the same thing. It's not like Milo's fucking crafting watches and selling like artisanal timepieces at the... Like, you know, it's like some company made a watch. That's not that interesting.
It's $75!
Dang, yo!
It's not inspired by the song Get the Time. It's a watch! Watches tell time. It didn't have to be inspired by shit. It's a watch with the band's logo on it. Saying inspired by Get the Time is the biggest load of bullshit. What does that even mean? How?
Hey, I didn't write the article, man. I'm just reading.
This is the same company that made that shitty Hot Water Music watch. The Bad Religion watch looks pretty badass, though. It's got the Crossbuster on it.
Yeah, I gotta say, I can't fault a band for like licensing this out because I mean, it doesn't really hurt them. And as far as I'm concerned, bands should try to make money pretty much any way they can. you know, so long as like the stuff isn't like, you know, being made in like, you know, sweatshops in like China or something. Maybe this is, though, I don't know. So, you know, I mean, if it is made like by a fair method and people want it, it doesn't really hurt anything. So, you know.
No, I want to buy one of these and then return it because I don't think it is sufficiently inspired by Get the Time. Like, oh, no, you know what? The watch is great. It works fine. It's stylish and everything. But it really feels more like it was inspired by I Like Food. And that's just not what I was sold. I was told it was inspired by Get the Time. So, you know, take it back.
Fair. I don't think I could disagree with you with regards to that. And so anyway, wrapping it up, speaking of taking things back, one of the fellows from the Gaslight Anthem, drummer Benny Horowitz, has just put out a mini movie, which I think is kind of clever in concept. What it does is basically tracks the life of a vinyl record, which I don't think has been done before. It's kind of a fun little video. It's only 15 minutes. You can watch it on the Punk News website. And here's what he has said about it. Here's what Benny Horowitz has to say about the movie or the mini movie that he made. I fell in love with music when there was no digital music, and I'm still in love with music when the entire format of the industry has changed. It is an interesting thing to be a music fan and go through these waves. I couldn't imagine vinyl not being a part of my life. I couldn't imagine walking into my living room and not seeing my records. Do you guys watch the movie?
Yes.
Okay, I watched 6 minutes into the movie, and then we had this podcast to record, so I started jumping ahead in time to kind of see where it was going. So, correct me if I'm wrong here, and I don't want to spoil this, so if anyone doesn't want to spoil the movie, you can fast forward past my blabbing here.
Spoiler alert.
So spoiler alert, yeah. As I understand it from my clipping through the movie thing, the guy who gets the record from his girlfriend at the start is that old man at the end. Is that correct?
No, the dude who gets the record is the guy who goes to war and dies. The dude whose band made the record are the ones... He's the singer in the end who finds it in the store.
So that's the singer who finds it in the store.
Yes.
Okay. My point is still going to stand here. I totally skipped over the war part. I guess that was probably part of it. So that singer who found his record in the store, that was in the future then, right?
Well, it's the now. This was the past. See, these Gaslight Anthem fellas, they like the 50s and 60s. So I think the kid went off the NOM or something and he got it for his girlfriend. He went to NOM, and then the rock band was like a 60s, you know, they had the 59 sound or whatever, and you know,
Afghanistan, and then that old man is
supposed
to be,
not like, Afghanistan, he went to NOM.
Oh, because I was gonna say they could have had like space noises and those rings they put around everything in the Jetsons. They could have really futured up that ending.
Didn't you see all the dudes with the rolled up white t-shirts?
What are we talking about?
The video. Actually, by the way, if you didn't notice, Travis Emelian from Banquets, who's actually been on this podcast with us before, he's the bassist in the band in this thing. So there's lots of little cameos, too.
I'm done being stupid. So I don't know, like this is neat, I guess.
We are a warring culture, Adam. Get used to it.
This thing didn't really hold my attention all that much. But you know, cool for, you know, expressing yourself in art and making it. That's nice.
All right, well, let's give this podcast a little bit of Wee Boros, if you will. You know, we're talking about people signing to a major label as our first story. Gaslight Anthem signed to a major label, and about a year ago, people were going crazy over Gaslight Anthem. It seems to me the hype has died down, but I could be wrong. Has the hype died down for Gaslight Anthem?
I'd say yeah.
Why?
I think they've kind of gotten to that next level where it's a little shaky, where you don't know if they're gonna really take off and be huge. But I mean, their shows still sell out, do really fucking well. I mean, they're just expanding so much that they're not new, so they're not exciting. And in our scene, in our culture, whatever, it's about. A lot of it is about what's new, what's fresh, what's really, you know, grabbing your attention. So I think that's what's going on with them. People are still stoked about their record. I mean, handwritten, people were really stoked waiting for it and all that. And I know there were mixed reviews on it when it came out. But I think right now they've put out – this is their fourth full length. I mean, they're kind of at that point where they're a band that most people can count on to put out a reasonably good record. And, you know, but they're not going to be like, you know, unless you're a raving fan, you're not going to be like, you know, salivating, waiting for it.
Now, you see, this will be a good litmus test of if the majors are just trying to make money in a reasonable way, or if they're still being, I don't know, the major labels of old. Because the major labels of old would have completely dropped the Gaslight Anthem after Handwritten came out, because they would have signed Handwritten to be some blow up of a record that was going to, you know, make a whole shit ton of money for everyone. And the fact that it was just like a reasonable, passable record that fans of the Gaslight Anthem are going to like, and that isn't particularly offensive to everyone, it was just, you know, it was good, but it was a Gaslight Anthem record. That's what it was. If the major's okay with that and says, cool, all right, you made some money, you've got some fans, you sell your shows, make another one, then maybe they're operating more on a level of rationality than they were. If it turns out that we're going to find out in like 3 months that the Gaslight Anthem are, you know, no longer on their major and now signed to Side One Dummy or something like that, well, then we know they're still kind of operating in the way that they were. So, yeah.
I think it's a wonderful statement to close out on. Back to listening to the Punk News Podcast. We want to thank the bands that we played today. We want to thank Heathen Rain, and we want to thank Crazy and the Brains. We also want to thank the suppliers of our music that we play between our different songs.
Scotty at Death, False Hope.
We want to thank Scotty at Death, False Hope. And last to say, the opinions expressed on the Punk News Podcast are the opinions of the people expressing them exclusively. They in no way represent opinions, ideas, or anything else of punknews.org. So don't sue us. Thanks again for listening. See you next week.
Let's go.
Let's go.